Chapter 2. The policeman driving us to jail was Mr. Avery Gaston, but the men at the SO station called him Shoe, a puzzling nickname since there was nothing remarkable about his shoes or even his feet so far as I could see. The one thing about him was the smallness of his ears, the ears of a child, ears like little dried apricots. I fixed my eyes on them from the back seat and wondered why he wasn't called Ears. The three men followed us in a green pickup with a gun rack inside. They drove close to our bumper and blew the horn every few seconds. I jumped each time, and Rosaline gave my leg a pat. In front of the Western Auto, the men started a game of pulling alongside us and yelling things out the window, mostly things we couldn't make out because our windows were rolled up. People in the back of police cars were not given the benefit of door handles or window cranks, I noticed, so we were blessed to be chauffeured to jail in smothering heat, watching the men mouth things we were glad not to know. Rosaline looked straight ahead and acted as if the men were insignificant houseflies buzzing at our screen door. I was the only one who could feel the way her thighs trembled, the whole back seat like a vibrating bed. "Mr. Gaston," I said, "those men aren't coming with us, are they?" His smile appeared in the rearview mirror. "I can't say what men riled up like that will do." Before Main Street, they tired of the amusement and sped off. I breathed easier, but when we pulled into the empty lot behind the police station, they were waiting on the back steps. The dealer tapped a flashlight against the palm of his hand. The other two held our church fans, waving them back and forth. When we got out of the car, Mr. Gaston put handcuffs on Rosaline, fastening her arms behind her back. I walked so close to her, I felt heat vapor trailing off her skin. She stopped 10 yards short of the men and refused to budge. "Now look here, don't make me get out my gun," Mr. Gaston said. Usually the only time the police and Sylvan got to use their guns was when they got called out to shoot rattlesnakes in people's yards.
"Come on, Rosaline," I said. "What can they do to you with a policeman right here?"
That was when the dealer lifted the flashlight over his head, then down, smashing it into Rosaline's forehead. She dropped to her knees. I don't remember screaming, but the next thing I knew, Mr. Gaston had his hand clamped over my mouth.
"Hush," he said.
"Maybe now you feel like apologizing," the dealer said.
Rosaline tried to get to her feet, but without her hands it was hopeless. It took me and Mr. Gaston both to pull her up.
"Your black ass is gonna apologize one way or another," the dealer said, and he stepped toward Rosaline. "Hold on now, Franklin," said Mr. Gaston, moving us toward the door. "Now's not the time. I'm not resting till she apologizes."
That's the last I heard him yell before we got inside, where I had an overpowering impulse to kneel down and kiss the jailhouse floor. The only image I had for jails was from westerns at the movies, and this one was nothing like that. For one thing, it was painted pink and had flower print curtains in the window. It turned out we'd come in through the jailer's living quarters. His wife stepped in from the kitchen greasing a muffin tin.
"Got you two more mouths to feed," Mr. Gaston said,
and she went back to work without a smile of sympathy. He led us around to the front, where there were two rows of jail cells, all of them empty. Mr. Gaston removed Rosaline's handcuffs and handed her a towel from the bathroom. She pressed it against her head while he filled out papers at a desk, followed by a period of poking around for keys in a file drawer. The jail cells smelled with the breath of drunk people. He put us in the first cell on the first row, where somebody had scratched the words "shit thrown" across a bench attached to one wall. Nothing seemed quite real.
"We're in jail," I thought. "We're in jail."